Welcome to the Growth Elevated Leadership Podcast with Julian Castelli. Each week, we talk with senior tech leaders to explore stories and insights about the challenges involved with growing technology companies. We hope that these stories can help you become a better leader and help you navigate your own growth journey.
Today, I am very excited to welcome Deepak Sidwani. Deepak is the co-founder and managing partner of Wavecrest Partners. He focuses on helping founder-led, capital-efficient B2B software companies to grow and scale. Deepak's been in the investing business for a long time. He was a partner at Bain Capital Ventures in their growth equity group and also in venture capital at Comcast Ventures. Welcome, Deepak.
Hey, Julian, thanks for having me. Great to be here. Excited to chat and hopefully have something smart to say.
Well, you always do. We've had a lot of these conversations over the years, and when I started this podcast, I had you in mind as someone to talk to and hear your story. You and I got to know each other when you were at Bain and up in Boston, and I recall you being a very, very smart investor, very vertically driven. We were in a travel tech business at the time, and you had done a lot of work in that space. And you know, we were talking about potential deals, but you know, I also considered you an industry expert that I enjoyed speaking with. And I was excited when you called me one day and said you were starting your own firm, and that became Wavecrest Partners. So tell me a little bit about that founding journey and your path to starting your own growth equity firm.
Sure. So as you mentioned, and I'll just add a little bit to it, you know, I started out of undergrad briefly as an investment banker, was quickly reformed from that, started my own software company. So always had a little bit of an entrepreneurial itch, but did it at exactly the wrong time during what I call bubble 1.0 now and kind of the 99-2000 era. Got more into the operating side, came back after that didn't work. In product management and marketing and business development for a few years, both growth companies and one larger company. And so saw some ups and downs and then was lucky enough to get into the venture business in 2003 at Comcast, as you mentioned, joined Bain Capital in 2009. And then, you know, as you mentioned, you know, what I learned in my journey, which I'm excited to cover today, is I thought that Silicon Valley venture was the only way to invest in tech. And I went out and lived for 2 years in Silicon Valley. I joined a firm that did a lot of investing in Silicon Valley. And then what I came to realize was there was a different form of investing called growth equity. And, you know, it's a different level of risk, but it's also, I think, a different approach to working with founders. And so I learned that through investing in a founder-led business across from the Coors Brewing Company in Golden, Colorado in 2006 while I was at Comcast, and that changed my life. And that caused me to pivot to Bain. And so I did a lot of growth equity at Bain with non-Silicon Valley companies and exclusively focused on non-Silicon Valley companies because we had an office there that focused there. And, you know, what I discovered was kind of a gap in the market. You know, at the lower end of the market, businesses that are what I call more in the expansion stage, you know, 5 to 15 million of ARR. As I like to say, they've got something that's working, product market fit. Maybe they have one product instead of multiple products. And what they want to do is scale that. And so they need more help than I think just someone who deploys capital and shows up to board meetings. They want somebody who can, it can be a real sounding board on issues in particularly the go-to-market arena, sales, marketing, yeah, success, analytics. And so that was the impetus for starting Wavecrest out of Bain. Obviously, Bain's a great firm. I learned a ton, worked with really smart people. And obviously we met there. But I felt like I had the itch to do something entrepreneurial again. Right. And two, felt like there was a gap in the market for, you know, companies that wanted less than, you know, 20 million of capital and but wanted a partner to help them grow. So that's why we named the firm Wavecrest Growth Partners and started hung a shingle, as many many of your
That's your entrepreneurial journey. So you probably have your own story of the struggle, right? And was it easy? You just go out there and people gave you money and said, invest it for us.
What's interesting is, you know, we are entrepreneurs ourselves, and so have a lot of respect for founders who go through the struggle. And we went through struggle in the first 3 years of our business, including one founder departing, which I know has happened in some of your founder situations, and it happened to us. We also, you know, what's interesting about starting an investment business versus a technology company is, and certainly I'm not saying it's at all any harder or easier, it's just different, is in an investment business, if you don't have capital, you got nothing to do.
Right.
And so a big part of the game is, you know, pitching like an entrepreneur goes and pitches investors or pitches friends or pitches customers. And in our case, we have to pitch, you know, either wealthy individuals or institutions like universities or foundations or pensions. And, you know, but in the case of investment funds, you know, you need to get 10 or more of those investors to align in order to, you know, get past your existence risk. And
yeah, so that was your existential starting point, your cold start problem, right?
Exactly.
What was your first round, and how long did it take you to raise it? Your first fundraising.
It took us. So what's really interesting is, and this was a learning for us as well that you go through in the journey, is we started and said, okay, we should go raise some capital, but then very quickly. From my past at Bain, I had been building a relationship with an entrepreneur in the commercial real estate technology space. And his company, he wanted to bring in some growth capital and bring in some help to continue to grow his business. He was around, you know, 8 or 9 million of ARR. And so you know, we started early January 2016. By March, you know, we were already really talking to him. This gentleman named David Osborne, who's a phenomenal individual, about how to help him before we had capital.
And that could be helpful, right? Because you've got a deal on the sideline, or even do an SPV for that deal or something?
Yeah, so that's exactly right. It was you know, it was like the first customer that some of your founders
had. Yeah, founding customer, right?
You learned so much. It was our first investment. So we ended up really liking this business and going hard after it and convincing the founder that we brought a different approach than other investors that he had met in the market. And we gave him a term sheet. And so part of our story, if it was, you know, all founders have to be audacious. We were being audacious through.
Yeah, did you have the capital behind that term sheet?
That's the secret, right? We did.
My God.
And so very stressful time, as I'm sure all founders go through, when you promise something to a customer and then you got to go build it.
That's right.
It was very similar. And so in June of 16, we signed a term sheet with him, and then we went, and we of course had a sense of what we would do, like most founders. We weren't completely throwing spaghetti.
Yeah, of course.
But you didn't
have it signed yet.
We had to go do it. So
it's like the not as a vaporware, but when you show a presentation or a Figma or something of what you're going to build in a piece of software, right?
Exactly. Exactly. So it's the wireframe becoming the
wireframe. That's it.
And so we went out and raised capital and invested in David's company. And, you know, it was like the Genesis story. And so from our perspective,
did you close that deal before you raised your funds? So you did purpose vehicle.
Yeah, we raised, as you said, a special vehicle. We raised a little over 26 million. We had some friends co-invest with us in that. From other funds that we knew just from being in the business. And in September of 2016, we closed. And, you know, to your point, and this founders will understand this, when you get that 0-1 and you get that first customer and it proves that there's a value prop and a use case, then the next customer and the next customer are easier, right?
Right.
I mean, they're all hard, but
it's the cold start problem. You have to start with something.
Exactly. And so the ability for us to kind of get moving and have motion created more interest in us. I mean, obviously my partner and I had background in investing for 12, 15 years each, but to the institutional investment community, we're nobodies.
Yeah.
They don't care that you previously had Bain on your resume. And so when we had Building Engines completed, they said, wow, you guys, you know, one, I like the company, and two, it shows that you guys can win and that you know what you're doing.
Right.
And so it gave them confidence, as it does in your founders when they launch, you know, they land a big customer.
That really is very similar to a founding story of a tech company. So you can relate with your partners and portfolio company founders and CEOs. So from that starting point in 2016, it's now 2024. It was you and Vaibhav at the time with no fund and no companies. You got this first company, during the process. And now tell us where you are today from a size standpoint.
I have a lot more gray hair.
Me too.
But a lot less hair. But, you know, so we've gone from the two of us to 15 people now. We raised fund one at $145 million, invested another $100 million alongside of it. It took us 2.5 years to raise the capital. So to point you raised, I mean, these things are never linear. They're never up and to the right. There's always the stop and start, and the side, you go sideways for a few months. And
that is something I'm sure every one of your portfolio companies can relate to.
Yeah. And look, I think that, and I'll talk about it. We had both been operators for short periods of time, 3, 4, 5 years prior to, you know, being investors, and after, in my partner's case, after being an investor. And so EQ and humility are things that we developed through that. And then we went through it ourselves, right? And the staring into the abyss and wondering, you know, if we have a business. And so we try to bring that humility to the table with the entrepreneurs we are fortunate enough to partner with. But, you know, now we're, you know, 15 people. We have about $600 million under management. We're halfway through investing fund two. And so, you know, obviously a big difference.
And how many companies have
you invested in? Wake up and you feel grateful. And, you know, obviously I try to do that.
How many companies have you invested in now?
So we've invested in 14 companies. We've also, one thing I'll talk about on this podcast, we've acquired, you know, 22, 23 companies into those 14 companies as well, which can be an alternate strategy, additional strategy for growth for founders. And so
that's after you've made the initial investment, you've helped those founders grow through M&A.
Exactly.
So let's definitely talk about that.
Add to their market opportunity, really.
Yeah, that's awesome. And your growth equity, so you're in between venture capital and private equity in a category called growth equity. Why don't you help us define that?
Yeah, so look, many of your founders will build software companies and never raise capital, and that's a great approach. Many of your founders will build companies and raise venture capital, where the approach, and having been a venture capitalist myself, you know, 10 or 15 years ago, is different because it's a riskier proposition to the venture capitalist if you sit in their shoes, because they're backing these founders with zero revenue or $1 million of revenue.
Very early stage, highest part of the risk curve, right?
And so in order to make the business work for them, they need to invest in lots of companies. If they invest in three companies and they're all early stage and they all don't unfortunately work, then they won't have a business. And so from their perspective, they typically invest in 25 plus companies in a fund. As a result, they usually can't spend a lot of time with those companies because they have 8, 10, 15 companies each that they right. are responsible for. But what they're really trying to help figure out is which of these companies can be my Google, can be my
Workouts,
can be my Domo. And, you know, so that's the model of venture capital. And I did that for, you know, 6, 7 years. And then, you know, this company in Golden, Colorado, I invested in, that was a little bit later stage business. So what the founder ended up doing was bootstrapping, raising a little bit of friends and family money along the way, but effectively building a company the old fashioned way through blood, sweat, and tears, and taking profits and investing it in more people and more technology. And so what growth equity says is, or the principle of growth equity is, your business is already existing and it's growing, mm-hmm. but maybe it's undercapitalized, and that, you know, you could land grab the customers faster. You could invest in more products. You want to go faster. You want to improve your management team. You want to accelerate. And so our capital is less risky because there's already a business, but it's still focused on growth.
Yes.
And so that's why it's called growth equity, is a little bit later stage. It doesn't suit every founder, because some founders, you know, in a large horizontal market should raise venture capital, or some founders, to your point, may boot, like the founder of MailChimp, you know, may want to bootstrap his way all the way to a multi-billion dollar exit.
Right.
And so, but for the founder who says, I've put 5, 7, 10 years into this, I've gotten it to 5 or 10 of ARR, it's working, I would love to have someone who can help me hopefully see around corners. But in addition, I'd love some personal diversification, take some chips off the table. And I'd also like to double down on my growth. It's a good solution. And, you know, so it's really a partnership model working with the founders.
And what size of a company do they get into your range and your target sweet spot?
Yeah, 5 to 20 of ARR is where we typically invest, usually more in the 5 to 12 range. So okay. As I mentioned, early growth expansion, product market fits there. You have,
yeah, they've got, you know, call it $8 million that they've gotten enough customers and enough traction to be able to really understand the value proposition of their business. They've gotten some brand reputation in the space. And now it's about going from that 8 to 10 to 30. That next stage, that's where you're
helping. Exactly right. Yeah, we view kind of 0 to 5 as the hardest part of a founder's journey. And, you know, every part's hard, but, you know, going 0 to 5, figuring out a value prop that you can sell to multiple, the same value prop you can sell to multiple customers in a repeatable motion is really, really, really hard. And, you know, the founder should get paid for taking that risk, right? Mm-hmm. And so after you've gotten to that stage, then the problems become different problems of growth. You know, how do I hire a sales? How do I go from 3 sales reps to 15 reps?
Yeah.
How do I have a lead gen machine and a content marketing machine that works? How do I have customer success that is scalable and in some cases international? How do I, you know, my pricing model, every software, you know, sorry, not every company. 9 out of 10 or 99 out of 100 software companies that are 5 to 10 million of revenue, the pricing model they're using probably isn't the one that will get them to 50 million. So there's these strategic.
Yeah, it is not. They've got to do something different. What got you here won't get you there.
Exactly. So there's these strategic decisions on the go-to-market side that are really important as you go from 5 or 10 to 25 or 50. And so that's what we specialize in. That's what we love doing day in and day out. That's where we have specialists on our team who all they do is work with the portfolio companies on those key decisions.
Yeah, talk about your value added. You obviously are providing capital. You mentioned that you can provide the M&A playbook and capabilities, but what do you bring to really help the business on that journey from operations or advisory standpoint?
Yeah, look, I mean, I won't go as far as to say, you know, capital is commodity, but it's table stakes. Mm-hmm. And the real value is, as I like to tell entrepreneurs, the scars on my back shouldn't be the scars on yours. And so it's really the having built 30 companies from 5 to 50 or 5 to 25 or 5 to 100, there's just a lot of learnings, right? And same thing that you have, Julian, from being a multi-time CEO. And so, you know, our hope is to package up those learnings into, you know, digestible points of value where we can help the next generation of entrepreneurs. And so we've done that with something called the Wavecrest Operating Platform, which is 5 different pillars of value, which include best practices for sales, marketing, customer success, pricing analytics, people who can help on the journey, you know, cohorts, like you've done with Growth Elevated, but of CEOs that are on the journey from 5 to 50, and, you know, functional experts, a talent network to help them grow the business with execs. And so the goal of Wavecrest is not to take the keys or take the steering wheel. The founders and the CEOs drive the business. It's to really surround the company with value so that they have access to whatever knowledge and resources. In addition, we have 2 people full time who are, you know, go-to-market SaaS experts that work with the portfolio companies day in and day out on whatever they need. If that's product pricing, if that's customer success, it's really at the strategic level, helping them think through the org design, helping them think through TAM expansion. I mean, we have multiple different projects we do across different companies.
That's awesome. That is really value added to have that capability and that expertise. Is there a story or an example of a company that you can maybe share with us to show us how that works?
Yeah, I'll talk about this company. I have the logo on today. It's named Impel. Used to be called SpinCar, and that also speaks to one of the things that happen to these companies as they go from 5 to 50. Things change. Your market changes, and so SpinCar is founded by two very talented young gentlemen in Syracuse, New York, of all places. So we invest in...
That's far from Silicon Valley.
Yeah. We invest in places that oftentimes people didn't even know tech companies existed there.
Yeah.
Which is the beauty of the world we live in today, where you can, with AWS and Azure, do a lot and from a lot of different places. But, you know, they had built, you know, actually gone through their own, you know, pivots and tribulations before we invested in 2018. And they were a augmented reality digital merchandising solution for the automotive vertical. So okay. helping auto dealerships and auto OEMs to improve their customer experience online through the ability to, for example, go look at a car without going to the dealership.
Okay.
Seeing the vehicle inside and out, which is something that all of us have done. You know, you go and you inspect where are the scratches, particularly if you're buying used, and what are the things, you know, obviously you can't fully replicate sitting in the seat and seeing how it feels, but you can do a lot and save a lot of time.
Right.
And so, you know, trying to really bring a e-commerce experience to an industry that really didn't have e-commerce 5 years ago.
Okay.
And so that's what they were. And around that, they had built a data product as well, because they collected a lot of data around consumer interests and features and safety and the other things that consumers cared about. So they were 8 or 9 million of ARR, growing really fast. They had seed investors who, you know, really, you know, they had a couple of strategic offers on the table to buy the company. But the two founders, who were 30 years old, said, you know what, like, this is so much fun, and I see so much runway ahead of us that I'd rather continue to grow the business. But they had investors who were happy with some of the offers on the table.
Yeah, okay.
He came in and provided an alternate solution that said, you know, we'll buy out your investors. We'll give you, you know, 5 million of fresh capital on the balance sheet. And we'll give each of you guys a little bit of liquidity for, you know, the hard work you've done over the last 5-6 years. And so it was a package solution, and it has worked great. I mean, the company grew rapidly after that, but then, you know, we hit COVID.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, all the brick and mortar stores like dealerships were shut down.
Right.
And, you know, we had, as I'm sure lots of founders who started their companies pre-COVID, you know, crisis moments of, you know, churn went up, and, you know, no one can do digital marketing of vehicles when no one's buying vehicles. And so,
Right. And
you know, merchandising still matters. And actually what happened was COVID ended up initially being a massive headwind, but then actually being a real tailwind, because consumers said, I don't want to use public transport anymore. I want a car. I can be alone.
Yeah, car prices really shot through the roof all of a sudden.
Exactly. And then with the supply chain issues that happened after that in 21 and 22, the you know, inventory became an issue, and pricing actually went up. So, but the point is, we went through some tough times with churn. We had to, you know, make some cost cuts, including unfortunately some heads, and we had to belt tighten. And you know, the business, you know, was growing over 50% a year pre 2020. That year, I think, grew, you know, between 10% and 20%. So, you know, we had this moment of, you know, did we miss the window? What happened? You know, is the market going to recover? Luckily, it did. You know, but that's part of the benefit of, you know, these are two, you know, very smart young guys, and hopefully we were a good partner to them through that and helping them with the advice and the budgeting and lots of other things that we were doing around customer, you know, saving customers and customer retention. And now, then the next thing that happened was in 21, we had the opportunity to acquire a conversational AI business.
Interesting.
And what we realized was, as part of the digital merchandising process, that these are considered purchases. You spend $20,000, $40,000, whatever, on a vehicle. You don't just buy it like you would something on Amazon,
right,
you know, in 5 seconds. And so the conversational AI makes a ton of sense. The ability to have 7 or 10 touch points with a shopper in multiple channels.
Right.
And so, you know, we did a small acquisition of a product tech company that actually was based in Eastern Europe and had some initial US traction, then folded it into our product and actually used that to broaden the vision and the TAM of our company and added another product to sell to the same customers, which was extremely lucrative from a lifetime value perspective. So we ended up changing the name of the company over the next couple of years from SpinCar, which denotes more of a merchandising and kind of viewership value prop, to Impel, which actually in the Webster's dictionary means to drive forward. And so, you know, the whole vision of the company changed, the trajectory changed, the TAM changed. And so, you know, now the company fast forward.
Was that acquisition a key part of that?
Yes.
Uptake?
It made the product a lot more mission critical. You know, it's hard when, as your founders know, when you use AI and you see the good things it can unlock, to kind of do away with it. And the customers actually like it too.
If
it can, you know, automate tasks and, in, you know, in this case, chasing the customers and making sure that they want to buy your Jeep Cherokee or your Land Rover. It's a great use case. And so it made the product.
That process is very manual and.
Yeah, having sales.
I bought a used car recently and I'd say, you know, I probably responded to 8 and only 3 could continue the dialogue enough to keep me engaged. 5 fell through the cracks.
Yeah, it's almost to your point, and this goes for probably every industry, if you're not using AI for repetitive tasks and you're not using the benefits of automation, you're going to lose to your competitors who are. And so to your point, you know, human beings are, you know, and with all of the media we consume and all of the things on our phone every day, we have short-term memory.
Yeah, it's the attention span economy. That's what we're competing for, right?
3 days ago, we forgot what we saw.
Yeah.
And so, you know, it's important to stay in front of that. Anyways, you know, the business is now closing in on $100 million of ARR.
Oh my gosh! Wow.
And so, you know, and all kind of credit goes to the founders and the management team, and it's been a wonderful journey. We ended up along the way another solution where we can help founders. You know, 4 years in, the founders and we looked at each other and said, we love working with each other, but we've helped the company and they've helped, you know, obviously they grew the company from 7 or 8 or 9 when we invested to 50. And they said, you know, we should probably diversify risk a little bit at this stage.
Their personal risk and their investment.
Personal risk.
So you helped them take some more money off the table?
So we brought in a great investor that we knew well, did for a minority of the company. They took some more chips off the table and, you know, we said, but let's keep growing. And, yeah, you know, that was at 50 and now we're closing in on 100. We have another acquisition we're working on. And so anyways, there's my point.
That's a great story.
Journey can oftentimes include lots of different twists and turns, but some very accretive ones.
No, that's a great story. The founders managed to get a partner that could help them grow 10x or more, but they also managed to take some chips off the table and diversify their risk. And it sounds like you guys built a great partnership.
Yeah, and that's what, honestly, it's really about partnership. I mean, you know, the most fun and rewarding part of what I do as the quote unquote coach is work with founders and, you know, their success, it makes me so happy, you know, and it's, you know, everyone gets excited about different things. When I see founders kind of realizing their dreams or taking however many X chips off the table, or, you know, the company growing in size. We started the company was, I don't know, 60 people. Now we're over 300. I mean, those are just great, you know, milestones.
Yeah, that's got to be really rewarding. Well, that's a great story, and that sounds like the growth equity journey, and did a great job of explaining how Wavecrest could partner with companies to do that. So that's fantastic. Thank you for sharing that. Before we wrap up, you know, for our listeners who are out there and they want to get on a journey like that, any good books that you've read recently or podcasts that you'd recommend?
So while it is Silicon Valley, because I do feel like it's like the political discourse, you always need to learn about how different people view similar markets of the world, right? And so if you're on the left, you should listen to the right. If you're in growth equity, you should listen to venture. So one of my favorite podcasts I listen to every week is the All In podcast.
That's a good one.
Four Silicon Valley guys talking about tech and business. And, you know, it's folks sitting in San Francisco who have a certain point of view, but they're extremely smart and articulate. And so I always learn. Whether I agree or disagree, I learn.
Yeah.
So I think that's a good one. On the lighter side, one that I really enjoy is called Smartless, which is a comedian, the comedic one. It's basically three guys you probably know: Jason Bateman, Will Arnett, and I forget the third guy's name, who are personal friends, and they interview athletes and celebrities and political figures, and it's funny. You know, you get to see the personal side of, you know, people like Amy Schumer and other people they bring on. And then on the book side, I'm someone who's always kind of, you know, you reevaluating my own priorities in life and how I spend time and one that I love is, I'm reading Charlie Munger's Almanac right now. I mean, Munger, as you know,
one of the titans of the investing world,
but it's less about the Almanac's less about investing and more about just philosophy on life. Mm-hmm. And how you think about, making decisions and being decisive and doing your research and, you know, clearing out the clutter. I love people who are candid and plain spoken, and you know, he's a kind of personal hero of someone who just told you like it was.
Right.
You know, and obviously lived a great life to 99 and did a lot of things. So, and then another one on my personal journey I'd recommend is one called Die with Zero, which is a really interesting book. Kind of flips on its head what all of our friends at Merrill Lynch would tell us around how to save and invest your money. And it's really around enriching your life with experiences as early in your life as you can.
Oh, I love that.
Those like capital compound. Those experiences compound your life. And so it's a great book that was written by a very successful guy who was an energy trader. But his whole philosophy is, you know,
don't save up and wait. And then
don't wait till you're 65 to do the things you want. Do it now.
I love that. Well, that's a great, great message to end on. Deepak, where can people find you and Wavecrest?
Yeah, look, if anyone love to have conversations with your listeners, wavecrestgrowth.com. is the website. Deepak at wavecrestgrowth.com is the email. Certainly they can come through you as well. And obviously looking forward to doing a lot with you with these companies as well.
Absolutely. And come join us at the Growth Elevated Summit next year. Look forward to that. This has been great.
Hard to stay away from Park City. I mean, you live in such a great place.
Well, that is a definite advantage, and we'd love to host you. So look forward to seeing you there. Thanks for joining us this morning, and this was a great talk.
Thank you for having me.
Welcome to the Growth Elevated Leadership Podcast with Julian Castelli. Each week, we talk with senior tech leaders to explore stories and insights about the challenges involved with growing technology companies. We hope that these stories can help you become a better leader and help you navigate your own growth journey.